manageable hour to kind of do, but what I think I would like to do is just give a little, not description, is not the right word, just to talk a little bit about what the Lord's doing on the island, and then I'd like to open it up. Usually there's some questions, maybe not, it's okay, you know, questions are not forced, but if you have any questions, curiosities, or anything about the work, I'd like to give a little opportunity. We don't often have opportunity in the services. And then people will either find us at the table afterwards or they just forget the question and it's gone. And so, but I have a lesson plan here. But we are church planting missionaries to a small island country that's off the coast of Western Africa. The exact location, we're about 140 miles west of the country of Gabon, right on top of the equator. The easiest way to find our country is if you take a globe or a map, and if you'll find the left side of Africa, the western side, if you'll put your finger right on that spot, you're covering our country, where the equator touches. Most globes, actually, it's kind of funny because the globes, usually they make them in two separate halves, they put them together, and there's a little tiny piece of tape going around the middle, usually red. But that line where they make the equator around the globe actually covers our country. And so sometimes you will see the word São Tomé written right across the top of that line. But we are there. We're not a very big country. Total of water territory, there's two islands, but you bring it all together, the total land area is about one half the size of Rhode Island for the total country. I said land area, it's land and water combined. We live on the main island, which is called São Tomé. It's the largest. There is a sister island called Príncipe that's about 90 miles to the northeast of us. They're not very connected, 90 miles of open water, but they are together under the same government umbrella. They were discovered by Portugal back in the 1400s and 1700s. No, 1400s. What's 1400s, 1700s? I don't know. I'm letting my geologists here. No, I believe it was the 1400s because they've been there for like 500 or 600 years. So they were discovered by the Portuguese in the 1400s. They discovered São Tomé first on the day of St. Thomas, and hence the name São Tomé, which in Portuguese means St. Thomas. About a year later, they discovered Príncipe and started working on it in the north, and Príncipe means prince in Portuguese. And so we have St. Thomas and the prince together. But it's... like I said, it's a small island, but it's a very mixed culture. Now, when you think of Africa, typical things come to mind: mud huts, lots of safari animals running around, people running around in funky dress. We are not like that. We have a very mixed up culture sense. Our people are African. They're as African as it gets. But because of the Portuguese history of the island, much of our culture is also European. And so we don't live in huts. We typically live in houses. They can either be board houses or they can be brick. Our people don't act like what you would consider normal Africans. There are no tribes on the island. We do not have tribes. We have language groups, but we don't have tribes. But there is a lot, their perspective of life, excuse me, is mostly African. And it changes your perspective and values on life. What is priority? What is not? For most Africans, priority is right now, this second. Whatever is needed right now, we fulfill that need. What's coming in another 2 weeks, we'll take care of that in 2 weeks. There's very little thinking ahead, planning ahead. That's very typical of Africa. And our people are very much that way as well. But at the same sense, when you come into São Tomé, you will see what looks like old Europe. Based on the building styles, the way things are done, the way life is, it very much is like old Europe, but it's simply because of the development. So we have a great mixture of cultures that are on the island. The main language is Portuguese. It is the primary language. Pretty much everybody speaks Portuguese. It's what we speak. It's what we interact in. Our church services, all of that are in Portuguese. There are different dialects around the island. Most of them are Creoles. A Creole is where you take a primary language group and mix it with a secondary language and kind of create a language of its own. And primary Creole there is called Foro, It was developed because of the slaves that came over, combining their languages with, combining their languages with Portuguese. And but we also have one from Angola called Kibundu. There's another one called Angolar. In Principe, they speak a dialect called Lingue, and we do not speak any of those. So, Foro we have been learning, or I have been. None of them have a standard written form. And it's very typical, for instance, in the city, you'll see Foro words written on top of businesses, but you have to read them all phonetically because they will all be spelled differently. And you look at one way and they'll have a word spelled. You go to another store, they'll have the exact same word, completely different spelling. But if you read it phonetically, it's the same word. And they've never standardized any of the dialects. There are no standard written forms of them. And even grammars are hard to find. Most of that you have to learn. You have to find someone that speaks it and sit and practice and talk with them if they will give you the time. And so little by little, I've been finding older people that are willing to talk with me, and I'll go and visit with them and talk with them, and then they'll help me along. But I still can understand some of the dialect words. I still don't converse very well in it. I help teach English. My wife and I help teach English, and the students struggle and all this. Of course, they're learning a new language. Well, then when the dialect comes up, they just laugh their heads off because they know I'm having the same struggles at the time. And so it gives us a bit of a common ground, but we are church planters, and we were in the capital city, and that's where our house was. Last term, the Lord enabled us to purchase some property up in the country area, and the reason we purchased the property is because our work in the capital city ended. We had an extra long furlough due to some changes in the ministry. And when we went back, our group had dispersed. Many of them didn't think we were coming back anymore. And even though they worked hard and we worked to try to bring it all together, life had continued. Some of them had gotten married. Others were in college, university. And so we weren't able to bring that work back together again. But the Lord opened up the door for us to go into the country area. And we began a work there in a small community called Ototol. And that's where we're currently at right now. But going back and forth from the capital city to Ototol, we were able to do that, and it worked okay. But we got to the point in the ministry where we knew we weren't going to be growing anymore. We're just simply going up to visit and then coming back down to the city again. Now, we're not talking a lot of miles involved here. We don't judge things by distance on the island because everything is pretty much close in mileage. But we judge it more in time. And the whole aspect that you think of with island mentality, it's very true. I mean, when you're living on an island that's about 30 to 40 miles wide and maybe 60 to 70 miles long, what are you going to do? To go to vacation, you'll walk over to another city and you're having your vacation spot or something. But the concept of island mentality is, if I don't get it done today, I'll do it tomorrow. I mean, where's it going to go? And so it is a very common philosophy. It's very difficult to get into that. But once you do get into it, life is very good. And so, you have to work with scheduling. You know, our students are just, they're awed, like, beyond their ability to comprehend when we tell them that in the States, agendas are usually marked out in 30 to 15 minute increments. And that just blows their minds because our agendas are, what will I do this morning? I think I will try to do this. If I accomplish it, then great, I will think of something else this afternoon. And we look at one, maybe two things to do for the entire day. And it's because it takes so long to do things. It's not uncommon to stand in a line for 3 hours to get your paper signed by a government office. And so it really, you know, you adapt or you get stressed real fast. And so, but we, in the country where we're at, okay, things are even more relaxed than they are in the city. But we were about 20 minutes away, and by São Tomé and standards, that's a pretty good drive. And just to give you an example here, about a month after we had been back, we came back in May, and our oldest daughter, Morgan, comments, she's like, "Dad, why are you always stopping at gas stations?" I was like, "Well, honey, we drive a lot. We need fuel in the car. We have to stop." And so we sat down and we calculated our miles. And the very first month that we were here, We went almost what we would travel in an entire year on São Tomé because everything is so close. And so, you know, even in those senses, you know, your mindset, your perspective begins to change when you look at things. But we had reached a point where our going up and going down we weren't going to develop anymore. Our absence was creating a disconnect with the people. Our people are very relational based. They're very community based. And so we were praying, and last term the Lord allowed us to purchase some property near Ototol. And the intent was for us to be able to build there. Now, we didn't know when the Lord would allow it, but this last term that we just finished, the property was the term before. This last term we just finished, the Lord allowed us to be able to start building the house and get it finished to a state where we could move into it. And so about a year and a half ago, we were able to move into our house. It's not completely finished yet, but it's enough for us to live in. And it has, even during this short time, this year and a half, we have already seen changes in the way that people look and perceive us. Because we're not just visitors to their community anymore. We're actually part of their environment now. We don't live in Ototol. We live nearby. We live at a crossroads area. We have access to about 4 different communities, which by the Lord's grace, we're hoping to be able to reach out into in the future. But we're only about a 15, 20-minute walk from our church. And so it created that connect that was missing before. And even people that don't belong to our church, they know us. They treat us differently now, and in a good way, not in a bad way. But one of the things that I guess that registered with me that the people were noticing us is I was walking out with the kids one. We have a lot of bush trails to go through, not just the roads. And so we were heading to church through one of the bush trails, and it wasn't the very first time I had been down the trails, but it wasn't, you know, I hadn't been down a lot. So I just told the girls, I was like, hey, if we get lost, we'll just turn left or do something and walk and we'll hit a road eventually. So let's just go out here. But we got lost, okay? there was an older man coming down the trail. So I told the kids, I was like, hey, I'm just going to talk to this man. He'll be able to indicate us somewhere. If he can just point me to certain landmarks, then I can get out of here. So I stopped him and talked with him, and he was all, oh, yes, I know you guys. You guys live in this house that's just down there. And I was like, yes, no, that's us, that's us. And, oh, great, no, that's okay. And so he started teaching me the trails. He was teaching me where that trail went down to such a person's house. They have dogs. Be careful there. This trail will take you over the back way. This trail over here, go to the main road. This, da, 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 da. I do not remember all the trails that he taught me. But just that kind of interaction we had never had before. Because we had never been on their turf in their terms. It was always coming in a truck, come into the community, stop, visit with people, have your services, get in the truck, and take off again. And so it's been a real blessing ministry-wise for us to be where we are and to be living in the same area. It was a challenge getting there. Our construction project was a long one. It took about 2 years to build the house. And we did it all. We did it from the ground up. We dug the holes for the beams. We poured the concrete pillars and beams for the house. We made our own bricks. And it was challenging, but at the same time, it was good. The Lord has blessed 2 of the young men that were on our construction team are now part of our church. And the Lord has just really opened doors through the entire process of moving up there. And so it's been an interesting term. A lot of things happened that we hadn't planned. But at the same time, it's been very obvious how the Lord has been working and coordinating through it all. One of the big changes other than our residence that happened was we changed our church location as well. And that in and of itself ended up being a blessing. We had been trying to leave where we were. We had been at a plantation house for years. That's where we started the Bible study. English classes. The English classes faded away. The Bible study stayed. We got our core group of believers there. But the manager of the plantation, the farm area that was there, we knew him. Okay, he was the one that actually invited us to come up. But he liked the presence of the church, but he never wanted to be a part of it. And as time went on, he wanted to get more and more involved in elements of the world. He was trying to create a discotheque there where the church was, and later on he was wanting to build cabins so that people could come up and have fun over the weekend and whatnot. And we just thought, this is not an environment that we want to be developing our church in. But because of culture, we had to be careful not to just get up and leave and create a bad testimony. Well, the doorway that the Lord used actually was COVID restrictions. When the COVID restrictions came, the churches had to shut down. They shut down for, I don't know, 4 weeks on the island. And so we moved. We left the church site, and then we started meeting at the house of one of our members, a man in our church, and we're still there. And where he lives is right in the middle of the community. He's right next to the soccer field, which is a big place in the community. Soccer's very big there. And so we've had a lot of people become more aware of our ministry. They kind of knew we were there, but we were about a 15-minute walk from the community, and depending on your weather, the trails were mud. And so a lot of the people weren't coming simply because of that. But being more centrally located in the community, right next to the soccer field, a lot of people became more aware just in passing by the house. And we've had several people that come by and just kind of run sideways for a little bit, and then a few minutes later, they pop in. They're like, oh yeah, no, we saw you guys were meeting here and wondering, just curious of what it was. And many of them never came back. But that initial meet was there. It's curiosity brought them in just to see what happening. But little by little, the Lord blessed at the new location, and we actually have more now. The church grew during the COVID restrictions. And we have a young lady along with our girls. We have young men there. We also have children now. And the Lord extended that blessing. We actually have a couple of ladies who are coming to the church. And even though that may not sound super big or super challenging, let's say, when we first got to São Tomé, we noticed that the churches were full of women, but very few men. And it's a cultural thing. The women were coming, they were doing the spiritual part, and they were sincere in it. However, the men were off kind of doing their own thing. And so we prayed fervently and asked the Lord to give us men, because it's, for us, the men is the basis of it. And so the ministry went, and that's all we had for years. All we had were men, young men coming to the church. This last term was the first time we've had a lady come to be a part of our ministry. And which was great for us, because, I mean, we're going to train the young men and help advance the biblical principles of family and leadership. But this last term, we're like, okay, Father, could you give us some women, please? And so the Lord blessed this term. And we have a very mixed group coming in. And just before we left, we had a lady that was the mother of the young lady that comes. She came for the very first time, literally the Sunday before we left. And it was really exciting to see her. Dia is the man who is holding things together while we're gone, sent us some pictures. And his mother is now coming. She had been visiting. And I don't know if our presence was a bit intimidating to her or what, but since we've been gone, she's been present. And so it's just been really neat to see what the Lord has been doing over the course of the past couple of years. We honestly were not sure. When we went back in 2018 to start this last term, within just about 6 months, God had taken away all but one of our core group. They left the islands due to work opportunities. And can't blame them for that. They were seeking other opportunities. And we stay in contact with them. We send them messages through WhatsApp and whatnot. They weren't forsaking the group at all, but the Lord opened up certain doors and they were gone. And instead of growing when we went back, we like immediately reduced ourselves to one or two people. And we weren't sure what the Lord was going to do, but we were focused on the construction project at the time. But little by little, it all just began to bring back and begin to grow. And if everyone were to come now, I know we don't focus on numbers, but I want you to see the difference between the one to two. If everyone were to come now, our family aside, we'd have about 15 to 20 people present there. And that is all the Lord. It is Him working in the hearts of people, changing locations, a lot of things that we would not have been able to do on our own. And the Lord has just truly blessed this past term, not just in our residence, but also in the ministry, and things growing, and people coming to the Lord, and just being able to grow in Him. And we're just so thankful that He's allowing us to be a part of that process. But that is us. That is who we are. That is our work. And I could continue going on and on and on. I love to talk about Sound Tome. I love to talk about our people. But chances are I would talk about a whole bunch of things that don't interest you at all. So I would like to open it up to see if there's any questions. And they don't have to be ministry related. A lot of times we find curiosities about our island, about our culture, about our people. But I would like to give some minutes, if I could, just see if there's any questions about the work, about the country, about anything at all. And it's not obligatory. You don't have to have questions if you don't want any. But are there any questions at all? Yes, ma'am.
Do you have your children?
We do have children that come. We have... the three-year-old kind of tags along with the cousin. But the youngest one we have coming is a three-year-old. But we have them from 3 up to 11. Ziza hasn't turned 12 yet, I don't think. Oh, she did. She did turn 12, okay. And actually, the young lady, Ziza, she's a short. She's like a half inch taller and whatever. But she's 12 years old now, and she is one of the faithful ones that we have. Even when it rains, she comes. Even if the rest of her family don't come, she comes. And so she has been an encouragement. But we were looking at the possibility of getting some Sunday school classes and things like that started with them when our time for furlough came up. And so that is something that we really want to develop once we go back. So. Any other questions? Yes, sir. We'll take the man behind you, and then we'll come back. Yes, sir. We actually do. Mostly, it is from Nigeria. Nigeria is like straight north of us, and well, not straight, straight and cocked over to the east a little bit. But primarily, they're business people. There are Angolans that also come over for business. And but primarily it's Nigeria, Angola. Sao Tome is really a mixture of African cultures. The slaves that came in from the Congo Basin area, a lot of them also came in from Angola, and that's where we get our Angolar group. But there is also a big group of them that came down from Cape Verde. And so we have a lot of mixtures. The island's kind of segmented culture-wise. You have communities that belong to Cape Verde, so there's travel back and forth, and people from Cape Verde come in. There's communities on the eastern side, primarily the seaboard area, is where the Angolar people like to be. They're more fishermen by trade. And so there's also contact with Angola through that. And so we do have people come in. It's not like a great influx of going back and forth, but it does happen. We do have visitors.
Kind of like vacationing or business?
From Africa, it's actually more business. From Africa, it's more business related. The vacationers usually come from Europe. Europe likes to treat our islands kind of the way the U.S. treats Hawaii. And so for them, it's a way to get a tropical escape. And so tourism's pretty, it's bigger now than what it used to be on the islands, but they come in, they're picked up by a shuttle bus, taken to their hotel, they have their little program they do, they see sights, they're taken by a shuttle bus back to the airport a week later, and off they go. So they've had their little getaway, but, you know, they've got the touristy aspect to Sao Tome, but, you know, that's what they want. So. But, yes, sir.
How do you cope with the heat?
I love it. I love heat. When we were in the capital city, we would be 95 degrees inside the house at like 11 o'clock at night. And I would just be like, oh, yes. And my body just absorbs heat. My wife, on the other hand, does not. And so when the Lord moved us to our current house, we're further up the mountain. Not super, not like at the peak, but we're up the mountain. And it is notably colder up there. Where we're at, our average temperature is about 75 degrees, and that is cold. I sleep with like two or three blankets on me at night, but my wife's just like, oh, this is so wonderful now. Like, be quiet. But it was a big adjustment for us. We ran around in coats for a while, but being a tropical island, we're right on top of the equator, as you can imagine, it is pretty warm. It's hot and humid. Our humidity runs between 80 to 100%, except during the dry spell. During the dry spell, it drops down to about 60%, which is very dry for us. And so, but our island is a volcano is what it is. Our island is just one big mountain. And so depending upon where you're at on the shoreline, there are places on the shore that the only room you have is the road. And the edge of the road here is the ocean, and the other edge is a cliff going up. But yet on the other side of the island, it's a more of a plain area that slopes up. But no matter where you're at, you come in even a quarter of a mile, half a mile, you're already rising in elevation. And so where we are at now, we're considerably higher than where we were in the city, and hence the change of temperature for us. Winter time for us, it's not a true winter, it's more of a dry season. And we have about 3 months of the year. It typically goes from June through August. Sometimes it encroaches into September. But the rain pretty much stops. And every now and then there'll be a mist that comes down. The leaves will turn brown, they fall off the trees, and it gets cold. And it's our winter / fall all combined into one. And by cold, okay, we had a really, really cold snap just several years ago, actually. Soundsmans were dressed in their down jackets, had their toboggans on and gloves going down the road on their motorcycles. And it was in the high 60s. And so, which is incredibly cold for us. And so, it's many people come to the islands, and yes, the heat is something you adapt to. And it usually takes a few days. And even for us, when we go back, it'll take two or three days. And it just the sweat will just pour off of you into your body, acclimatizes. And so, but it will eventually acclimatize. And then it's just wonderful, if you like heat. So, excellent question. Yes, ma'am. You had a second one? Okay. The biggest industry on the island is agriculture. Yes. We do cocoa. Actually, you can buy chocolate bars at Walgreens and some of these others that will say it's made with chocolate from São Tomé. And we are big cocoa exporters. It's not as big as it used to be. Back in the day when the Portuguese were controlling and managing everything, São Tomé was the largest cocoa exporter in the world. And that is amazing for our small island. They would get 2 harvests per year of their cocoa by the way they managed it. That's not the case anymore. When they became independent as a show of good faith by the government, a lot of the plantation and farm areas were divided up and given over to the workers, which was a generous gesture in and of itself. Unfortunately, the workers were trained to work in certain areas, and they were given these plots of ground, and then they weren't given tools or anything to work with it. They were just simply told, it's yours, work it, start producing. But they didn't know how. They knew how to run one sector, and they depended on other groups to run the other sectors. And so what happened was the São Tomé just plummeted. Pretty much everything they had before they lost within a span of about 6 years. There's still a lot of struggle due to other political manipulations and things that had gone on in the past. I mean, São Tomé went down deep, and they're still struggling to come up. They are coming up, but it is a struggle. It's a fight. But agriculture is still primary. They produce cocoa. The majority of what they export is cocoa. They also produce coffee. They grow black pepper, and they also produce a little bit of vanilla as well. And so there's a lot of fruits and things that are on the island, but for some reason we don't export the fruits. And so people mainly focus on those other, they're considered the cash crops. Tourism has become really big in the past few years. And they've tried to develop the ecotourism. Even the Sao Tomeans look at it and think it's crazy, but, you know, I guess if you're coming from a developed country, it could be a type of vacation. The eco-lodges and whatnot, you're basically going out to a shack in the jungle, no electricity, no water, and have a happy 3 days. And people come in from Europe like, oh, this is so great, what a challenge. And we're just like, you guys are nuts. But unto each their own. I enjoy camping, okay, don't get me wrong, but I don't go to a place like that and pay high bucks for a vacation. So, there's a lot of hotels on the island, and there's actually some that consider themselves to be 5-star hotels. I don't know if they actually are or not, but they really have tried to develop the tourist sector. One of the biggest problems that they have, and I think that's why the ecotourism has become a big focus, is Sao Tome and infrastructure as far as water and electricity stinks. The water is very poor. One of the last governments made a big show of running water lines and putting community spigots out in a lot of different communities. And within 2 or 3 months, they were all dry because there's just simply no water to run to them. Not that many. They're trying to diversify and spread the network, but the supply has not been increased in terms of water. And so it creates a lot of water shortages. Even in the capital city, areas will go for 2 or 3 days without water. And so it's very common. You'll see people going down with wheelbarrows loaded with water bottles. And it just, the water spigot near their house happened to run that day, and so everybody's running out there filling it, and then they take it back to the house. Well, it's hard to develop tourism when your water supply is doing that. Electricity is even worse. We have roughly 5 huge diesel generators that power the majority of our island. But when we left, one was functioning, one was being repaired, one needed to be repaired, and you didn't hear about the others. And so they're, once again, trying to develop and modernize. I mean, you can... It's very common to walk into a community, see this shack or shanty house, what we would consider a shanty house. The boards have dried and shrunk. You can look to one side and see out the other because of the way it's all built, because housing is not a priority for them. The house is only where they sleep. Most of them don't even eat in their house. They eat under the house or they eat outside. So the house is only for them to sleep in, and it gives them a place to store their things. And so inside of this house that looks like it would blow over with a stiff wind, you step inside the door and you could find a sound system that's worth over $1,000. And so, again, African perspective, priority, what's important in life, things begin to shift a little bit here. But the way that they see things and the way that they look at things is different than the way we would look at things. The concept of your home is your castle to them is absurd. Why would I want to make my castle a little one-room house when I can step outside the door and I have the whole island before me? And so the idea of spending time in your house is crazy for them because it's not what they do. If they're going to relax, they'll sit outside their house. They'll lay down on a log outside their house before they go inside and sit down. And it's just the perception, it's just culture and the way the house is treated. But that being the case, they have tried to modernize in areas of cellular phones, TVs, equipment, things like that, but the electric grid just doesn't sustain it because they have not increased the output. And so in those areas, Sao Tome is still trying to meet the challenges that are before them. We don't have stoplights in the city, and that's done on purpose because what good is a stoplight if you don't have electricity? If that's your main source of controlling traffic, then woe be unto you the next time the light goes out. And so everything's run by road signs and things like that, but it's because of the electrical base. And that's something that they're trying to look at and trying to face, but it's a very uphill battle just due to a lot of factors. So. Yes, sir? In that aspect, yes. Catholicism is the official religion of the island. It's not like a state church. but it's just understood that this is the base religion. Most of your people are Catholic, but they're Catholic by birth. They may never go to the church, but they were born Catholic. They were baptized when they were infants. That's what they claim. There are the Jehovah's Witness are there. They have been growing recently. They've been bringing in a lot of missionaries, and they really put themselves out in a very attractive way. We've known some evangelicals that have joined their group, but it's simply because they don't understand the doctrines until after they get into it. But from what I have understood and heard is that people are coming in at the same time people are going out. Because as they progress through and then they find out, because Jehovah's Witnesses also have a lot of rules and regulations as to what they can eat and what they can't. But in that regard, we also have Seventh-day Adventists. Seventh-day Adventists are it's a difficult lot to categorize. And I say that carefully because in a lot of areas in the U.S., they're considered a cult. And by definition, if you get a hardcore Seventh-day Adventist, they are, and by definition. They have their prophet, Ellen White. They have her books that many of them will read alongside of the Bible. And many of them will place it above the Bible because she interprets the Bible for them, etc., etc. But there are many that you talk to, particularly where we're at, that aren't that hardcore. And you sit down and you talk with them. They believe in salvation. They believe in salvation, trusting in Jesus Christ, that He died on the cross, and all of these things. But it usually comes down to the core part is the law. Actually, that's what my lesson this morning was going to be about. But I don't think we're going to have enough time. We have really good friends that are Adventists, and we've had excellent conversations with them about these things. And as a matter of fact, I remember I sat down with one of my English students. He was coming to the Bible study, and he came over one day just to visit, and we were talking. He brought the subject up, and we were talking about eternal security, because for the Adventists, they believe that if you say that you're saved and will always be saved, once saved, always saved, it's a symbol of pride. And because for them, their salvation is based on how closely they can adhere themselves to the law. And to say that I'm always saved means I will now forever obey the law without ever compromising it. And that's arrogance. And so for them, you know, they come at it from a totally different perspective. But good gracious, Abdullah, we were out there talking for 3 or 4 hours and comparing scripture references and talking about things. And at the end, what he told me was, I understand what you're saying, but I just can't wrap my mind around it. And it's because of everything that he had been taught. So, you know, a lot of what we deal with on the islands is religion itself. Religion is super strong on São Tomé. They will even name their shops with names of God. Okay, it'd be like Jesus' repair shop or something like that. And it's not mockery and it's not blasphemous for them. They believe that they are in some strange way honoring God by doing this, and that by calling attention to God's name, God will therefore bless their shop. And the concept of the quid pro quo is very strong. And when it comes time for, if they're in a difficult position in life, if they are struggling through something, if a child is sick, they will come to church. They will bring their Bibles, and you'd be amazed what they will pick out of the Bibles. Oh, yeah, I was reading this the other day, and they'll come out and they'll talk about with you some good stuff and deep stuff. But as soon as the situation is gone, the Bible goes back on the shelf, and they go back to the world. And it's because for them, if they want God's blessing on their life, they have to do something that will please God. And it's more of a cultural thing. They do something that they believe makes God happy. I go to my church. I carry my Bible. I read it. I talk with people. God is happy. He will bless. Once the situation has changed, I go back to life until I need God again. And so it's very much I scratch my back, or you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours kind of a mentality. That is probably the biggest thing that we work against when we minister, is the concept of religion on the island. For most of them, religion is just what it is. The idea of a true personal relationship one-on-one with the Lord for most of them is they don't even think it's possible. And so most of what we do is teaching. As the people come in, we teach them from the Word. And it's a patient thing. Trust is very hard won on our island. And so when you talk to somebody, the first few times that you talk, it's just, okay, they're expecting an angle. They're waiting for you to try something. They're waiting for the other shoe to drop. And so the first few times that you're talking with somebody, it's just gone. It's gone. But after that, okay, it didn't happen. All right. So they start listening, and they get a little bit here. The next time, they get a little bit more. Then they start asking questions, and then you can expound a little bit more. And you're talking multiple visits, multiple exposures to it. But it's phenomenal when they sit there and they're like, hey, wait a minute. If this means that, then this other verse over here we've been talking about has to mean this. It's like, exactly. And then the dots start to fall into place. And we learned, and I'm going to have to end with this, but we learned very early in the ministry that due to culture, we could have converts by the hundreds, okay, just by going out and talking with people. They don't like confrontation. Okay, and if they think you have something that they can gain from, oh, they'll be your friend for the duration of however long it takes to get that thing. And so going out and saying, do you know that there's a God in heaven? Oh, wow. Yes. Oh, absolutely. Oh, would you like to get saved? Oh, definitely. Definitely. Would you pray the prayer with me? Oh, absolutely. And then you go back a day or two later to do some discipleship and follow up, and they know you because, hey, here's the white guy. But everything that happened in that conversation is gone. They don't even remember the conversation. It's simply their means of interacting, making connections, and all of this. But we have found that when presented with the Word, and you let them mull it over, you let them think about it, you let them come to their decisions, once they determine it, it's done, and it's theirs. And they don't deviate. Or it's very hard to deviate from it. And just to give one quick example on this factor, one of the young men that got saved through our ministry, he's now in Portugal. When he was coming to the church, we were starting to talk about baptism. And he was from a Catholic heritage, from a Catholic tradition. And he just flat out said, hey, I got baptized when I was a baby. One baptism is good enough for me. I'll never get baptized again. And he was ready for confrontation. He was ready to do battle about it. And so we're just like, yes, it's no problem. We know everybody has to make their choice. So we taught on it, moved on. Come back to it and taught on it again. Come back to it, taught on it again. At each time, he was like, well, so baptism means this then. It was like, absolutely. Don't confuse it with this. That's what it means. Well, what about this over here? Some of the churches are teaching this. I was like, well, that's not Bible. This is what the Bible says. And 2 years is what it took him. And we had a baptismal service for another young man that got saved, wanted to be baptized, and we opened it up for any others that wanted to be. And we actually had a good group. We had 7 or 8 of them come to be baptized at the time. Was it 7 or 8? No, my wife's like, that's evangelistically speaking. So, but we had a decent group that come to be baptized, and he was one of the ones that came. And when we opened it up, he actually never confirmed. He never said, I'll be there. But he said, I'll think about this. This is not, baptism's not what I thought it was. And So when it came time for the baptismal service, we knew we had one that was going to be baptized. But when we invited him to come into the water, Marlon, which is the name of this young man, and a couple others were standing up to come in. And I asked him, I was like, what are you guys coming in here for? And he's like, well, I need to be baptized. I've been saved. I need to get baptized. I need to be obedient, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just their way. It's how they do things. But it took him 2 years to come to that point with continual teaching, asking questions, clarifying, going through all of the muck that he had been in his mind and trying to use the Word to help get some things straightened out. And I love teaching, I love being able to open the Word and to see understanding, but it takes a lot of patience. And that's probably our biggest prayer request, is for patience and wisdom. And because if we push, they make the decisions because we wanted them to. And if we're out of the picture, God takes us somewhere else or takes us home, where does that leave them? And for us, the basis shouldn't be me. The basis should be this. Because even when I'm gone, this remains. And so it is a patient work, and it's not a speedy one, but it is tremendous to see the Lord working in lives, and it is just fantastic to see the lights come on and that you know the truth has hit home. And we're just so thankful that the Lord has allowed us to be a part of that. And in closing, and as I step off the stage, thank you to the church in general. We appreciate your faithfulness and finances. Things are not easy world round. And so we want to say thank you for your faithfulness and the financial giving. Without it, we can't live there. But more importantly for us is thank you for your prayers. Everything that we do comes to one simple basis, and that's spiritual decisions. And we can't affect that. It doesn't matter how eloquent I am. It doesn't matter how strong we are. It doesn't matter how capable we are to adapt. The spiritual choice has to be made in their own heart. And that is effected, I believe, in a great way by the spiritual power that we have and the prayers backing us. The devil doesn't like these things to happen. The devil doesn't like when people leave his domain and step into the Lord's realm. And he fights it. And it's not always an open fist fight battle, but there is a lot that goes on in the heart and the mind of man that pushes people away from Christianity. And those are things that we can't combat. All we can do is share the truth. And the Holy Spirit has to do the work in their hearts. And the work that is happening on São Tomé, yes, the Lord is allowing us to be a part of it by physical presence, but it is a spiritual work, and we're so thankful for the prayers that our churches are giving and that are backing the work as we move forward. And we just wanted to tell you as a church as a whole, thank you so much for that.